we never had young people out here to play. When you,
there weren't any, there really, weren't was any, the answer.
But you never felt you wanted anything at all except what we had, which was the woods and Bramwell and yeah. And so on. Mm. It was a perfect life.
Whip up a batch of fresh opera in your own kitchen. First, you need to assemble your ingredients. I recommend that you accidentally rediscover some lovely subtle sharp folk song arrangements for piano and voice on the stand of someone else's piano, for instance. Remember how much you liked them in choir when you were a kid. Go and find a free copy, as it's out of copyright. That'll come in handy later, on IMSLIP, the online sheet music library. Print it out and over a dark winter, play it through cover to cover. Dog ear your favorites. Go through it again and try and tease out what's so good and clever about it. Checkmark the best little moments. Copy the fragments out by hand. You may not know why you're doing this yet, but the little encyclopedia feels nice in the meantime. By the way, who is Cecil Sharp? A collector, an arranger from the first English folk revival. His 100 English folk songs was first published in 1916. You're going to deliberately and systematically, sonically pillage it for your score. My name is Cal Folger Day. The other voice you hear is Anna Clock. Here we are sitting at the piano singing number 63, Hares on the Mountain, from Cecil Sharp's 100 English Folk Songs. Anna played cello during a live performance of my opera The Woods and Grandma at the Dublin Fringe Festival in 2017. What you're going to hear is a radio program about my opera, which happens to be about a radio program. I call the piece a verbatim pop opera. The grandma of the title is Lady Gregory, writer, folklorist, and co-founder of the Abbey Theatre in Dublin. The Woods is her home, Cool Park in County Galway, and the words are an exact verbatim transcription of a 2005 radio interview on RTE1 with her two granddaughters, Anne and Catherine. Ring up your mother-in-law. Who will thoughtfully suggest an RTE television documentary about Lady Gregory? She remembers you had a copy of her book and really loved it. Try and find it on the RTE Player app. When it isn't showing up, search for it online instead. In confusion, press play on something called Two Ladies of Galway, which turns out to be a radio program from 2005 and not the recent television documentary you were looking for. What you hear is two sisters. They're 90 and 88 years old. They're remembering their childhood. They're hilarious. Fall in love with Anne and Catherine.
You know, what we're talking about in Yeats and all these people, we were children. They were grown-ups. We had no idea they were important people in any way. As far as we were concerned, they were just adults.
Just adults and just friends and grandmothers.
The moment that I started listening to it, I was like, what is this? What angel has put this in my path?
Yeah, I just remember that first day, like, listening, and I hadn't heard any of the lyrics or any of the music at all, actually. Yeah. And I was sitting trying to, like, suss out what was going on. And the words, for some reason, the words that kind of stuck out for me most were all the, like, ums and ahs, which you kind of, like, were in there, be like, I used to, or whatever, yeah. Like, wherever they appear kind of thing. And that, like, stuck out. And I was like, ah, yeah, I like this. I like a song that has the word yeah. in it. And then has an interruption from another singer and stuff. Listening to them, that's kind of what they sound like.
Yeah.
You get this, so.
Well, when you know that you're going to be denying your audience the opportunity of actually hearing the original recording, which is so precious to me, then I was very, very loath to lose any detail because it's all so much an intrinsic part of their character. of how they're speaking and how their brain is processing the next thing that they're going to communicate. You know, ums can be really critical.
They show the emotion behind the words.
Yeah.
Because it's the hesitation, isn't it? And
exactly.
The way that they're... The kind of unsaid things come through, I guess, in all that.
Like, a lot of the joy and challenge of making the melodies is that, this, like you, exactly what you said when you heard the recording, is that they speak over and finish each other's sentences so much.
Now to the chopping board. Everything is laid out on the counter ahead of you. You plan for none of it, but now it looks coherent. You have a set of selections from the Cecil Sharp songs, and you have a full transcription of this really funny interview.
We used to do it every day, because if we went out in the woods, we had to have something to eat. I mean, you couldn't go out for a couple of hours and have nothing to eat, so we used to take apples with us. And if we did, we went and picked them, of course, picked them up out here, and we carried them in our knickers. We had knickers with elastic around the knees, and it was a wonderful way of carrying. It was a bit duck-like walking. But I can remember vividly, we came out one day, out here, out this gate, and Mum and John, Augustus John, were coming up from the yard. And Mum stopped, I can remember, look of absolute horror, with us walking with our feet rather far apart. And she's saying, what on earth's the matter with you children? What's wrong with you? And I think we were rather nervous. That, you know, it's the apples, you see.
Lady Gregory was a very important maternal figure in the lives of Anne and Catherine. They talk very lovingly about how she would stop whatever she was doing to investigate any small curiosity with them. Despite their interruptions, she managed to achieve a great deal, writing her own books, writing dialogue for Yeats's plays, and establishing the Abbey Theatre in Dublin. A lot of the work she did was to serve as a platform or an enabler for other people's words and other people's thoughts to be heard.
She learned Irish and then collected a lot of folk tales and legends herself from storytellers around Galway. And those are great writings. She published several volumes of them during her life. And that's why she was so good at capturing kind of like rural speech patterns that Yeats needed for his plays, because she was used to recording them verbatim. I mean, you can tell in the way that she publishes and presents them that the wording is incredibly important to her.
Yeah.
And preserving the sense of the spoken word.
Mm. And it's a nice gesture as well then to take this interview with her granddaughters and do the same thing again. Because the way that they speak and the way they use language, but also their whole kind of linguistic sphere that they inhabit in terms of the sense of humour and everything and the way of telling stories, and especially in terms of, I think, the relationship between the two women on the recording.
Yeah.
It's so special.
Now we're going to start mixing everything together. Pick out a critical line from each section. The rhythm of its syllables are going to help determine a groove. With that groove in mind, take a look back on your list of favorite moments from the Sharp songs. Are there any connections in terms of syllable pattern of the melody, or simply what seems to be a harmonious vibe? there are rules here, but remember, you're making them up.
This is like the original use. So like two women sitting around a piano is Cecil mm-hmm. Sharp to a T, isn't it?
Yeah.
So let's actually sing this beginning of this guy really quickly, and then we'll okay. try. So you know the music of the opera, but you don't know this.
No, I don't.
And so we'll see if it becomes clear to you what I've robbed.
Okay.
Whether we can sleuth it back.
Okay.
I know you can see the check mark in front of you as well, but...
I know where this is from.
Where is it from?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, this, of course, is absolute heaven, as you can imagine. The beginning of the night would. Yeah, let's listen to the words from the original.
Well, this, of course, was absolute heaven, as you can imagine. The beginning of the night. But, of course, the paths weren't solid like this. They may have been solid, but nowadays they were mossy.
And, of course, there were far more big trees than...
Yes, there
were. I don't say it was thick forest, I think, but there were big trees out against the sort of...
Well, there was none of... No other masses of growth here.
So here's the bit that I took. Here's the bar. So in this piece, it's just in a straight up four pattern. Row, row, down, 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 diddle all the day. So it sounds quite straight. So I just ended up using these as a kind of syncopated backdrop for what ends up being a triplet rhythm.
And again, you've kind of added the seventh, which is kind of a pretty like jazzy kind of...
That's totally true.
I mean, it's in there, it's in the Cecil Sharp as well, the kind of flattened seventh, but it's emphasising that.
Totally.
Again, finding the jazziness.
Yeah.
In the,
He definitely hints at things, and then I just tend to sit on them.
Yeah.
Like, that's that opening chord, really.
Yeah.
It's fairly jazzy. So this is like 10 minutes after I wrote. That's me singing Nisha's part. It's seagulls outside the fringe lamp.
Climbing very well, but they all seem to have like this climbing.
love minor six chords. And so for a lot of them, I just checked out a minor six chord.
Why don't you just play what a minor sixth is, so people have a bit of an idea.
Okay, so here's a minor triad. Mm-hmm. And then we're gonna add that color to it.
Okay, so you get this kind of suspended feeling.
Yeah.
It's a bit creepy or something.
I think it has a hearkening back, kind of like remembering the Romantic era feel, depending on how it's voiced. But it can also be quite jazzy. There's a lot of room for it to be kind of, you know.
A real wistful feel.
I think it's a good example of a chord that, within the context of a more consonant form, can sound like an, you know, like a juicy leading tone, like it's a nice kernel of something that's going to resolve in a more typical fashion. But when you just sit on it, then you're not sure what is the tonal center of the chord. You're not sure kind of who's running the show here. You're not sure what's happening.
So it's kind of, it's quite dramatic in that way.
Yeah. Or it's also kind of, it is dramatic in that nothing is happening. Here's a few chords. It's another good example of like quite crunchy voicings.
Yeah, there's a lot of jumping around there in the bass, which is quite unusual for this kind of music.
Yeah. And to have a second here, here's these big open chords. To have that second, it's outrageous.
Yeah, this one.
Yeah, it's the fifth and the sixth of a G minor chord, except they're on the bottom. So it's quite unstable. That's quite an unstable form of that chord. Even though we're hearing it over and over, which is why he, in a way, can afford to be so loose with it.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I think I tried to take a lot from him was the confidence to, for instance, play a chord three times in different forms and just kind of sit there. I just pussyfoot around that because I would think that it was too stupid or boring. It's really not.
Yeah, just the same notes in different combinations.
Yeah.
Over and over, yeah.
It really doesn't sound boring, but I'd think that, like, to have earned my salt as a composer or something, I'd have to do kind of, like, something more exciting than that, and you don't really have to.
No.
So that's one lesson I took a lot. It's really important to keep like a degree of humility and service to the melody. And what's going to be really interesting, you can't be breaking new ground all the time. It's like, just do something that's helpful. Just play something that's helpful and supportive.
Whittle out a setting of the text to a melodic motif within the constraint of that groove and harmony from Sharp. A motif should somehow have an internal tick, which usually means its heft is balanced in terms of rising and falling intervals and duration of tones. It should have the capacity to be reproducible with variations and still be recognizable. Once this little act of magic is accomplished, the rest of the related text tends to spin out obediently.
So we'll look at the first one and start at 89. Spanish ladies. This one is a little tricky to play. So we can stop there.
Has the A minor and E major thing at the beginning.
The key is going to be a big trick in this because I actually changed the key. Sorry.
No, it's okay.
I've deceived you. Let me turn to the page and I'll show you what happened.
Yeah, show me what happened.
I copied it out. And do you see what key signature I had copied from the guy before?
Oh, yeah.
So then by accident, when I played this going back out of context, I turned it into G major.
Ah.
Oops.
Yeah.
So just transcription errors. Embrace them. So that's...
That's lovely that that can happen. You know?
Yeah, that's one... It's kind of... Handwritten mistakes are a very special kind. They're a dying breed of mistakes.
Yeah.
So you have to embrace them.
Yeah.
George Bernard Shaw, or GBS as they called him, was a favourite with the girls at Cool Park. He had a good sense of mischief and definitely wasn't above joining in their games and being a bit of a ringleader.
Okay, so let's see. We'll play the ladies talking and then we'll talk about a couple other bits as well from this guy.
One visit, which was during the First War, we weren't allowed bread with jam and butter on it. You could have jam or butter, wartime. GBS asked for jam, and Grandma looked at him and said, but you've got butter on your bread, you don't have both. Oh. The next thing we spotted was he sort of held up his plate to Grandma and said, look, that's only a slice of dry bread. Now can I have jam, please? And she said, yes, of course. But we'd seen him turn the slice of bread over and the butter was on the underside.
It's crazy, because when you can hear the music over, it's so funny to hear the ability to hear the music under it. Even for me, like, you know. Okay, yeah, we took that main theme here and just repeated it over and over. Took it as a riff.
One visit, which was during the First War, we were not bread with jam and butter on it. You could have jam. GBS asked for jam. Grandma looked at him, she said, but you've got butter on your bread. You can't have both. So the next thing we spotted was he kind of held up his plate. Grandma said, look, this is only a slice of dry bread. Now can I have jam? And she said, yes, of course. But we'd seen him turn the slice of bread over, and the butter was on the underside. And we were horrified. I think, mind you, we were probably thinking, why couldn't we be
absolutely very envious?
Let's look at 91, only a couple songs away. Complete coincidence. Come all you worthy Christian men, right at the beginning, it's like I wasn't even trying. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right at the beginning there. It was such a great piece of drama. You know, I wish I could have used this 8,000 times, but it's another good example of voicing because really not very much is happening harmonically. I mean, it's not like I need his help to play E minor. I can also play an E minor chord. I don't need Sasha Sharp's direction. But the way that he voices it is really good. So that's what I end up sticking with.
Yeah, because if we just to kind of go a... It has a completely different feel, but it's all in the voicing.
Yeah, it's all how he fits it together.
And the accents as well.
You could even play it... Right, so you could play it like... That's the exact same notes.
Yeah.
But it has, that's almost quite a moody feel.
Yeah, walking into a cave at night.
As opposed to the outrage of being cheated at the game of Thimblezoo.
I'm remembering my cello bits.
So the part that you're singing is Song 93. What's this one called?
It's a Rosebud in June.
Yeah, and again, robbing the riff right from the beginning.
Of course.
Yep. No shame at all. Here's the rest of it. So it's nice. But it has quite a different character when... Yeah. So when you take that bit out, then it has kind of, it's kind of living a new life, so I'm happy enough. So when you put all the parts together, you have, and then, Honestly, they were near each other on the page.
Yeah.
So I,
in your transcription.
In my transcription. Yeah. Because it was all so pleasurable and easy, I was so precious about keeping it so pleasurable and easy. The whole process. Yeah. If something was too hard, then I stopped doing it. I was like, just take the first thing. Does that work? Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, and then I kept going. It was very important to me to keep that, to keep that sense of ease and pleasure.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't want an easy life?
So to save myself the grief, I often group these songs in the same key, and it's an arbitrary choice, but it was quite easy to justify. If it's good enough for today, it might be good enough tomorrow. So at least do it today. But if it doesn't work, then there were things that got scrapped as well.
Once while he was ill in London, GBS corresponded with Anne and Catherine through a series of postcards with rhyming stanzas that very playfully give us a window into the dynamics and personalities at play in Cool Park. He addressed it to two ladies of Galway, which was the source of the title of the original radio programme.
So we sent him off some apples, and we had a most marvellous poem, which he sent as thank you. And it was written in his own handwriting on the back of postcards, which had pictures on one side.
So we sent him off some apples. We had a most marvellous poem, which he'd written in his own handwriting on post, on the back of postcards, which had pictures on one side.
And it started two ladies of Galway called Catherine and Anna, whom some call a Kushna and some call a Lana, on finding the gate of the fruit garden undone, stole Grandma's apples and sent them to London. And Grandma said the poor village school children were better behaved than the well-brought-up cool children, and threatened them with the most merciless whippings if ever again they laid hand on her pippins. In vain they explained that the man who was battening on Grandma's apples would die without fattening. She seized the piano and threw it at Anna, then shrieking at Catherine, just let me catch you, she walloped her hard with the drawing room statue. God save us, herself has gone crazy, cried Marion. Is that how a lady of title should carry on? If you dare to address me like that, shouted Granny, goodbye to your wages. You shan't have a penny. Go back to your pots and your pans and your canisters. With that, she threw Marion over the banisters.
And now, declared Granny, I feel so much better that I'll write Mr. Shaw a most beautiful letter and tell him how happy our lives are at Cool under Grandmama Darling's benevolent rule.
And it started.
Two ladies of Galway called Catherine and Anna, whom some call a Cushla and some call a Lana. Said the poor village school children were better behaved than the well brought up cool children, and threatened them with the most merciless whippings if ever again they laid hand on a pippin.
Bannisters.
So actually, we've been talking about a few different kinds, because some of the text that we've been talking about so far has been, you know, the verbatim transcription, which is most of the bulk of it. But there are these passages of verse, which kind of had their own challenges. It was like either I was setting transcription, which is quite unnatural for music, or I was setting verse, which is almost by contrast, felt done to death. Yeah, so that was an interesting contrast when I was fitting those parts in, because they stood out quite naturally on their own, so... I had that in mind. I didn't even do anything particularly different, but I was quite conscious that I was coming back to the regular thing.
It's such a kind of thing from another time as well, that someone would be talking and then suddenly just break into verse by heart, because we just don't do that.
So in addition to arranging this piano stuff, Cecil went around on the weekends and collected it. Cecil, we're on a first name basis. Cecil went around on the weekends and collected it, and this is Scarborough Fair of Simon and Garfunkel fame. And this melody is different, so there's obviously been different collections, but you'll definitely recognize some of that Parsley, Sedge, Rosemary and Thyme vibe. So with the piano, here we go.
Parsley, Sedge, Rosemary and Thyme.
So I'm going to play the piano by itself.
Yes, please.
You know? Do you know where it is from?
Do it again.
Parsley, Sedge, Rosemary and Thyme.
Yeah, it's just a few of those chords, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ugh, yes. I'm trying to remember the... You get Yeats.
Sings it.
It's Yeats.
Yeats.
Exactly.
It's Yeats
singing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeats was a very frequent visitor and guest at the house, but Anne and Catherine found him a little aloof and more than a little odd. They put this down to his artistic temperament and have a pretty good sense of humor about it in their memories of him, but I also think he was seriously, profoundly bizarre.
And then he suddenly began reading, you know, the poem about yellow hair. Never shall a young man thrown into despair by those great honey-coloured ramparts at your ear.
Wow, what a tone she reads that in.
Yeah. Again, it's lovely to hear her, reciting poetry from memory, you know.
Yeah, and also reciting poetry from memory with disdain in her voice.
At your ear.
And yes.
That was the source that we were working with.
Just ignored one, really.
Didn't do it on purpose, it was just out of this world. Sent up to the room he was sitting in. We used to have a sitting room upstairs, and told Mr. Yeats wanted to see me, and I thought, dear heavens, what's happening now? And I went in, and he said, sit down. Then he suddenly began reading, you know, your poem about yellow hair.
Okay, good. So the first example we had there was Scarborough Fair, and then let's move to two songs later. Again, the expediency of these things were probably just on similar places on the page. We've got Bridgewater Fair.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's just more bits from that song.
Lovely.
Let's see, so how does this part go? The melody goes.
Oh, Master John, do you beware?
Oh, we have to finish it.
And don't go kissing the girls at Bridgewater Fair.
That's how it goes. Let's do that
again. Good morning.
Oh, Master John, do you beware? And don't go kissing the...
Yeah, it's almost like a child, like a playground rhyme or something.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's try and fit it with the melody.
Oh, Master John. Oh, Master John, do you beware? And don't go kissing the girls at Bridgewater Fair.
Yeah, I'm going to botch that melody now.
Yeah, exactly. That's the main theme. So I took that just from this riff at the ending. So I just took that and repeated it a couple times. These are chords from something else. And then I stole this other little bit for the when the second voice comes in. Yeah. It is funny to hear, because these songs, these are folk songs, and so it's like there is something sing-songy, like it seems like one imagines the melody being connected to the meaning in a way, so then it's funny to rewrite the meaning, or imagine the superimposed meaning of the new song. Yeah. It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's lovely.
I added that D.
No, I was just working out what was going on.
Yeah. So it's in the vocal melody.
Yeah.
That I
and
put.
Then, yeah. No, it's lovely.
Okay, so let's see. We'll find the last part of that, which shows up a few times in that song, which is in 69.
The brisk young bachelor. Just that run up.
Exactly.
Mm.
And then I took it someplace else.
Yeah.
Yeah, but exactly. I thought that was a great walk up. Especially that. You don't know where that's coming. So that's kind of the third major part. This is the little intro.
Such color there, brown or black or carrot, that young man in despair may love me for myself alone and not my yellow hair. I heard an old religious man but yesternight declare that he had found a text to prove that all God, my dear, could love you for yourself alone and not your yellow hair.
I was very embarrassed, I thought it was over. You know, dog, anyway, no, I sort of said, oh, marvelous, Mr. Yeats, read it again. Never on which, of course, he that was splendid. Saying something stupid like I must go wash my hair or something.
Set such color there.
But not very long after that. Mr. Yeats was on broadcasting from Boston, I think it was, and this was on. Mr. Yeats comes on and he says, and this is a poem. This effect, and then he did this. Never shall the young man think. Well, next morning they come down, and there's an envelope by my plate. I'm from this Austrian gold, who was my boyfriend at the time. And I thought, well, this is absolutely marvelous. And opened it a poem, and I thought, wonderful. Made at last, and the poem read.
since I first sat down by myself and started putting these songs together, a lot of musicians have played them with me, and they've each been a part of the composition process.
You know how to read music, but we didn't do this piece using any music.
No.
And everybody else just learned it by ear and doesn't really read music.
So kind of everyone just adding in their own, when they hear that riff, like what do they think of kind of thing.
Yeah, it's way more satisfying to do it that way.
Yeah, I don't think there was any sheet music involved when I came in, which was really nice, actually, way to learn it, because I was just listening and being like...
I think I said, like, do you want some? And you were like, no.
Yeah, even though I studied music for many years.
Yeah.
I teach it as well. It makes me very anxious when I'm sitting and having to play from a score, because suddenly it's like there's a right or wrong, whereas if I'm just playing something, you can get your full self into it.
One of my favorite moments from the original interview is when John Quinn takes Anne and Catherine out from Cool Park to the beach house at the Flaggy Shore, where they point out a mantelpiece that their father had worked on with Augustus John, the painter and his good friend. Dada is Robert Gregory, Lady Gregory's only son and Anne and Catherine's father. He died in World War I when the girls were 6 and 4, so their memories of him are very scant and precious. They talk about how there are these cracks in the mantelpiece and that they always used to blame them on Augustus John rather than their father. Because Anne and Catherine had so little time with their Dada, those cracks and the mantelpiece becomes this precious connection to him. This is one of those moments that Anne and Catherine probably hadn't really prepared as a family story, and it doesn't appear in their book about their lives. But when they're in that house looking at the mantelpiece, it turns into a really tender and touching moment. And I think it's one of the privileges of verbatim theater that you can take something that's an improvised, spontaneous moment that nobody could have prepared for, and you're able to preserve it and look back on it again and again, and you can really fully appreciate its significance.
Well, the two mantelpieces, one here and one in the sitting room opposite, they were put together and made by our father and also Augustus John together. They used to build, they had a great time building them, I understand. And we were told as children that, you know, they'd been made, and we used to look at them. And we used to look and see if we could see anything slightly crooked among one of the bricks or one of the things. And if there was something a bit awry, we used to be very loyal and say, oh, Dada couldn't have done that. Augustus, Mr. John must have done that and made that mistake.
And Grandma was presented by Cal Folger Day with Anna Clock. It was produced by Rachel Lee Quinn with Owen O'Kelly. The musicians on the recording of the opera are Cal Folger Day, Nisha Rue, Bob Gallagher, Phil Christie, Nick Boone, Alva Nikaroktig, Daniel Fox, and Ben Engel. The opera was recorded by Chris Barry and mixed and mastered by Forrest Christensen. And that programme, which is available to podcast from the Lyric feature page of the RTE website, was nominated for the Prix Europa and the Prix Italia in 2019. The original documentary on which Cal's opera was based is called Two Ladies of Galway and was produced by John Quinn, and it's available on the RTE Doc on One website.